Okay, maybe we're on the go here. Everything running over there, I guess. Tonight we'll be studying the book of Nahum, the prophet Nahum, and we'll see what he has to say here in just a few minutes. He does some prophesying against Nineveh. We had another prophet who prophesied against Nineveh. And a little different situations at that time, wasn't it? And his name was Jonah. Very good. Good. The Lord spoke to Jonah, if you remember, and told him to go to Nineveh. And he had seen the great wickedness that they had done. And so he told him to go and preach. And Jonah's preaching deeply impressed those of Nineveh. And cause them to do what? To repent. And isn't that what Jonah said was going to happen? Basically. Yeah, I knew that was going to happen. But anyway, they did repent and they declared a fast. They put on sackcloth and even the king took off his priestly garments and put on sackcloth. And declared a fast, decreed neither man or beast was to eat or drink while they sought God's favor. And completely different reaction then than it is now, and we'll get into that in a minute. Jehovah saw how they had reacted to the warnings. He had compassion on them, and he determined not to destroy that city. And if you remember, that was a city of about 60,000 people at that time. And he asked Jonah, should I not be concerned about this great city? And of course, he should be. And God was serious about Nineveh. If they had not repented, they would have been destroyed. But they did repent. And we learn from that book that a little later on, Assyria is going to receive the judgment of God. We're going to talk about that tonight. We see how God uses other nations. That's what Jonah told us. They use other nations for God's purpose, for His great plan of salvation. And that's going to come about. He uses them to bring judgments against even His own people. And that's exactly what has happened. So before we get back into Josiah, we need to consider the prophet Nahum. The exact date of Nahum is not necessarily known. We do know that he mentions the destruction of Thebes. And if you don't know where Thebes is, see if I can draw you a crude map here. Of course, this is Egypt down here, and Thebes is right on down here. So it's way down south, somewhere down that way. So that he's mentions the destruction of Thebes in the book of, and it took place somewhere around 663 BC. The fall of Nineveh was around 612 BC that he's prophesying against. So that gives a possible date between 640 to 620 BC, somewhere in that vicinity anyway. The one thing that Nahum does, he cries out against the city. Nineveh is fallen, and of course Judah is very thrilled over this. They couldn't be happier, if you want to put it that way, because something is happening to Nineveh. And that's probably the reason that Jonah was not happy about going. They didn't particularly like Nineveh for what they had done, their situation. So that's a possibility anyway. But this gave Judah the assurance that God is just and that he would judge those people who were wicked. He's avenging the wickedness of Assyria for what they had done and their actions. And the book can be outlined kind of like this: God's righteous anger and the fall of Nineveh, the destruction that is to come, the guilt of the city of Nineveh. And those kind of, you may find some better than that, but that's what I come up with. The twofold nature of God we see is goodness and severity, and we see that in Romans 11th chapter, verse 22. Behold the goodness and severity of God on them which fell, severity, but toward thee, goodness, if thou continue in his goodness, otherwise thou shalt be cut off. God never lets his enemies go unpunished. And he is a jealous God and avenging God. And we read that in several places in the scripture that God is a jealous God. Why would he be jealous? Wants everyone to serve him and him only. And as a matter of fact, that's one of the Ten Commandments, if you remember. The Lord is slow to wrath, but judgment will surely come, Nahum tells them in chapter 1. Verse 3, the Lord is slow to anger, we see it here, and great in power. He will not at all acquit the wicked. The Lord hath his way in the whirlwind and the storm. The clouds are the dust of his feet. He's slow to anger, and we know he's very patient. He's patient with us today as well. But, you know, there comes a point in time when what's going to happen? Your time's going to run out. That's right. And we have to take advantage of the time that we have. God is an all-powerful and all-knowing God. He knows everything that's going on. He has all the power. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. And we need to keep that in mind. He hasn't changed. If anybody's changed, it's us that's done the changing. So we sure want to keep that in our thoughts and minds. In verse 4 of chapter 1, he rebukes the sea, maketh it dry. He drieth up the rivers. Bashan languisheth, and Carmel, and the flower of Lebanon languisheth. The mountains quake at him, the hills melt, the earth is burned at his presence, yea, the world and all that dwell therein. And we see what great power he has even in the last month or so in the earthquakes and the volcano eruptions and how things can just come to a screeching halt because of the ash that's up in the skies and those kind of things. We see the power that is in his hand, that he can use it in many, many ways. Who can stand before his indignation? And who can abide in the fierceness of his anger? His fury is poured out like fire, and the rocks are thrown down by him. Probably referring to like hailstones, maybe, those kind of things. And of course, it's a volcanic eruption. The literal rocks are coming down, so. But he has all kind of power. The Lord is good, a stronghold in the day of trouble. He knoweth them that trust in him. But with an overrunning flood, he will make an utter end of the place thereof. And darkness shall pursue his enemies. He's a stronghold in the day of trouble. And we need to keep that in mind today, that he is there. And if we would just rely on him, in our prayers and everything we do, keep God in mind as we go about our daily walks of life and how he can help us and even relieve our minds and conscience and so forth. Assyria's history was one of rebellion to God, and we saw that way back, even in Jonah's day. They were rebelling and turned against God. And of course, with his preaching, they repented, turned back. Now, it's not going to happen. He will cut them down. God used Assyria to punish Judah for her wickedness. And he used other nations as well. And because they had literally gone off to idols, worship idols, and done the abominable things of their children passing through the fire to Moloch and those kind of things. But idolatry and worship. We need to keep that in mind today because we don't have idols per se, do we? Or do we? You know, we put other things before God. Is that idols? Okay. What are some of them?
Money.
Material possessions.
Job.
Recreation. There's a number of things that we can say, oh well, I've got to do this. And so we really have to get our priorities right, don't we? And keep them in line, because we can fall into the same kind of situation that these people did in putting other things in front of God. It's like Judah did. They put idols, and you know, they were actually worshiping idols, and yet did they think they were worshiping God? Yeah, they did. And that, you know, you got people that in the same situation today a lot of times. They think, well, you know, I'll go worship occasionally, you know, or, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm all right. I punch my time clock, as Bob Walden used to say. And if I get it punched, well, you know, I'll be all right for a month or two or three, whatever. And they come back again after that. But this is going to be so severe that Assyria's descendants will not bear her name. Where is Assyria today? Not there, is it? Not Assyria anymore. And I don't know that it came back, really. Some of you may know that, but I haven't seen it anywhere.
No more of that name be called.
Yeah.
I have a note. I think
go ahead.
From Bob's class.
Okay.
That these people were renowned for putting their name
okay.
down. There's only no more mention of them.
No more name. Okay. Very good. Thank you. Good point. Their name would be done away with, you might say. Verse 13 and 14. I got it. I had the next thing coming up there. So for now, will I break his yoke from off thee, and will burst the bonds in asunder? The Lord hath given a commandment concerning thee, that no more of thy name be sown. Out of the house of thy gods will I cut off the graven images, the molten images. I will make thy grave, for thou art vile. What's the difference in a graven image and a molten image?
Carved and molded.
Okay. Very good. That's good. That's exactly right. So now Nahum says, look, Judah, you know, here's something coming. There's something. One comes over the mountains, and what's going to happen? Well, here it is. He's bringing good news about the fall of Nineveh. Wow. Judah's going to be happy with this. And gather together and celebrate your feast. Get ready to appreciate what's happening. Your enemy is defeated. You're not going to have to worry. We should celebrate today when the devil is defeated and our child turns back to God. We need to remember this as well. You know, we need to celebrate when a person that we know of who turns back to God, our child is baptized into Christ. We need to have that same feeling towards those kind of people as well. And we do a really good job of encouraging people like that, and that's to be commended. That's good. Nahum says, O Nineveh, guard your fortress. Here's what's coming. Chapter 2 tells us about, here's the things that's going to happen. Watch the road. You know, you know, when you think about the enemy coming, what are you going to do? You mean looking down the road for him to come? You know, that's what he's telling them. Watch the road. Brace yourselves. Here it comes. So he's got them watching. Make yourself strong, for destruction is coming. His soldiers' shields are red. What do you think of when you think of their shields being red? Possibly could be bloody. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. I also thought of the fact that it could be they were shiny in the evening sun shining on them. Maybe, I don't know whether that's it or not, but I thought of the blood as well, and the warriors are clad in scarlet, which may be the blood as well, and the chariot's metal will flash on the day they are made ready. So they're going to be bright and ready and coming. The chariots will storm through the streets going back and forth. How did they use chariots? none of you were there. They used them to run over people because they were pretty heavy, some of them. But they also, while they were, one was driving, possibly they had another one who would be shooting arrows or throwing spears out of them. So you can see how they would go back and forth, especially if one was in there with arrows. He could carry several arrows in within the chariot. But as they go back and forth, and they could run over people. I tried my best to find it. I had heard, and some of you may have too, I don't know, that a lot of the chariots were made with swords sticking out the wheels. Have you heard any of that? Some of you heard that? I have too. I looked online to try to find something, and I couldn't find anything online that related to that. It may be there, but I know that may be the reason they were going back and forth through the cities as well and cutting down people with those sharp-edged pieces that were built onto the wheels. And they would stick out, and you just run over people, and it just pulverized, you know. So they were a very wicked people, very bloody city. They looked like flaming torches and dart about like lightning. That's what the chariots looked like. Destruction is everywhere. And the people of Nineveh, they're going to cry, stop, stop. You know, don't do any more, you know. But God's not going to listen at this. They are going to be completely destroyed. There will be none to listen to them, none that they can turn to rely on for help. Other nations, they're not going to help them as well. They will plunder their silver and gold, and we saw some reliefs of how they would go into cities and they would carry off all of their goods and their clothes and all their silver and the gold and those kind of things. And that same thing is going to happen to Nineveh. As a matter of fact, he goes on to talk about that, the city being pillaged and plundered and stripped. And the question he gives a little bit later, I think, their hearts will melt, their knees will give way. You know, when you get really afraid, you know, your knees kind of start to buckle just a little bit. And sometimes they buckle if you don't get afraid, you know. But anyway, but their bodies will tremble. They're afraid of what's happened. Their faces will grow pale with what's happening. And the question is, okay, now, Assyria, where's your cruelty? Let's see what you can do now, you know. You've been cruel and mean to all these other people and nations, and now, where is thy cruelty? And, of course, there they are on the downward spiral. You were the lion who devoured others, and now you are the prey. So, you know, before you've been the one who's gone out and got all of this, and now it's your turn. And Nahum is telling them all of this. The Lord says, I am against you, O Nineveh. And it's because of what they had done. Did God not want them to punish Judah? Yeah. So what was so wrong about this thing? All right. That's exactly right. The cruelty they went to was far beyond what they should have done in God's sight. And so now he's punishing them for that wickedness that they did over and beyond what they should have. And that happens with several nations back through history, if you think about it. That same thing happened. You remember the voice of the messengers when they came to Jerusalem? What did they say? But basically, what was their statement, though?
They blasphemed God. Okay. No other God could stand before us.
Very good. No other God could stand before us. We've wiped all these other nations out. And now, the voice of our messengers shall not be heard. There won't be any voice from them now, will it? And as we go on into chapter 3, we see that the punishment that God is going to give them is what is actually deserved because of what they have inflicted on other people. Woe to the bloody city. we're told. And that's basically their demise. It's full of lies and robbery. The things that they've done, there will be many casualties in this city, and you're not going to be able to get out of it. Verse 3 talks about there's going to be bodies everywhere. Verse 3, the horsemen lifted up both the bright sword and the glittering spear. There's a multitude of slain and a great number of carcasses, and there is none end of their corpses. And they stumble upon their corpses. You just think about, you know, how many people that might be. You know, we know back in Jonah's day there was like 60,000 people. How long ago was that? That's several years. So there's quite a bit more people probably there now than it was at that time. Comment? Anybody? We just read verse 3. There it is right there. Okay. God is going to strip her naked and let all the nations see her filthiness. That's what we're told in verse 5. Behold, I am against thee, saith the Lord of hosts. I will discover thy skirt upon thy face, and I will show the nations thy nakedness and the kingdoms thy shame. All will flee when they see her shame. Verse 7, it shall come to pass that all they that look upon thee shall flee from thee and say, Nineveh is laid waste. Who will bemoan her? Whence shall I seek comforters for thee? And there's not going to be anybody who will comfort her. No one will defend her as well. Verse 8 says, art thou better than populace? No, that was situated among the rivers and had the waters round about it, whose rampart was the sea and her wall was from the sea. You're no better than these other ones. And this is what Nineveh deserves for what all she has done. And he asked the question, are you better than Thebes, which you actually had destroyed? That's been cruelly destroyed by Ashurbanipal. A lot of just really wickedness in the destruction that was given. Your strongholds will be shaken loose like ripe fruit on a tree. Verse 12 tells us, it will be shaken. They shall even fall into the mouth of the eater, and they'll be eaten up, basically. Your people will be like defenseless women. You probably get problems with some women saying that today, but That's the word of the Lord saying those kind of things. That thy people in the midst of thee are women. The gates of thy land shall be set wide open unto thine enemies, and the fire shall devour thy bars. He goes on to tell them you need to draw water. Avoid complete destruction if you can by throwing open your gates, surrendering to the enemy. And if you do that, then you might be saved somewhat. Yeah. Prepare for battle. And he tells them that. Draw water for the siege, verse 14. You remember, one of the things you had to have to live and still have to have to live is water. And that was the reason, one of the reasons that Jerusalem could last so long, because they had the water that came through the Gihon Spring, if you remember, that we looked at. So that made a big difference in them being able to stand off people for a longer period of time. But other cities did not have that kind of thing. They had to go out and get water. So you tell them to go out and draw your water, for a siege is coming. Strengthen your defenses. You're going to need all the strength you can come up with. Fire is going to devour you in verse 15. There shall be fire devour thee. The sword shall cut thee off. It shall eat thee up like the canker worm. Make thyself many as the canker worm, make thyself many as the locusts. Gather a large army. They're going to need all the people they can get. Verse 16, thou hast multiplied thy merchants above the stars and heavens. The king of the world spoileth and fleeth not. Thy crowned are as the locusts, and thy captains are as the great grasshoppers, which camp in the hedges of the cold day. But the sun riseth, they flee away, and their place is not known where they are. Even though there are many, they will be fleeing in the heat of battle. Verse 17 just told us. The high officials, the captains, they're going to all be fleeing as well. They're not going to be able to stand when destruction comes. All are dead, never to rise again when this city is destroyed. The city will never be rebuilt, it says. And all who hear of her destruction will clap, according to verse 19. There is no healing of thy bruises, thy wounds is grievous. All that hear the bruit of thee shall clap the hands over thee. For upon whom hath not thy wickedness passed continually? So people who hear that Nineveh is going to be destroyed or will be destroyed, they're going to clap. They're going to be happy. Especially Judah. They were happy about that situation. No pity from any of them, because they had harassed so many of the nations round about. Practically all of them in that region. Okay, so as we turn back to Josiah, it is the 18th year of his reign. We're in 2 Kings 22 and 2 Chronicles 34. 2 Kings 22, 3 through 7. We'll just read this. It's just a few verses here. And it came to pass in the 18th year of King Josiah, that the king sent Shaphan, the son of Azaliah, the son of Meshullam, the scribe, to the house of the Lord, saying, go up to Hilkiah the high priest, that he may sum the silver which is brought into the house of the Lord, which the keeper of the door hath gathered of the people, and let them deliver it into the hand of the doer of the work, and have the oversight of the house of the Lord, and let them give it to the doer of the work, which is in the house of the Lord, to repair the breaches of the house, unto carpenters and builders and masons, and to buy timber and hewn stone to repair the house. Howbeit, there was no reckoning made with them of the money that was delivered into their hands, because they dealt faithfully. So, what do we see here? These men are sent to do what? To get the money, count the money, and give it to the workers, you might say, to pay them for their work. After Josiah cleansed the temple and removed the idols, he sent these men to repair the house of Jehovah. He sent them to Hilkiah the priest, and took the money which had been collected and delivered it to the workmen to fulfill their obligation. And these men were very dedicated to their work. We don't read a lot about a lot of the men being able to do this type of work, do we, in Judah, in Israel, either one. We know that back in the days of the judges, where did the people have to go to get ironwork done? Philistines, that's right. They had to go to the Philistines to get their ironwork done, because they didn't have anyone who could do that in Israel and Judah at that time. But there evidently were some who are very crafted, good craftsmen that were there, and that they may have just not had what it took to do that kind of work back in those days. I don't know what the situation was. The workers did their work very faithfully. Many from Manasseh and Ephraim had given money for the temple. And they also, came to worship as well at one time. when Hilkiah went to carry the money out of the house of God, he found something. And this is over in 2 Chronicles. Let's flip over there and look at 2 Chronicles 34, 14 through 21. It's not a whole lot of verses there, and we'll look at those as we go on. But when he carried the money out of the house, he found the book of the law of Jehovah given by Moses and placed in the house of the Lord. You just don't think about all of a sudden finding, you know, this. You'd think everybody had a Bible. You know, of course, this is not the Bible, but were there not very many of them? No, it wouldn't have been. It's not like it is today. You know, every household's got multitude of Bibles, a lot of them. This law of Moses that was given, this would have been the Pentateuch. That would be basically from Genesis through Deuteronomy. That would have been on this particular scroll. And what did they do with it? Where had it been? Collecting dust. Yeah, it was somewhere in the temple, wasn't it? It was not in the ark. It was beside the ark, what I can ascertain anyway. The two tables of stone were the only thing that was in the ark of the covenant in the days of Solomon. What else used to be in there? Pot of manna? Aaron's rod that budded. Yeah. But there's nothing that I know. I hadn't found where it says that the scroll was in there, in the ark. So it was stored somewhere else in the temple, I suppose. Deuteronomy 31, verse 24. It came to pass when Moses had made an end of writing the words of the law in the book till they were finished, that Moses commanded the Levites, which bear the ark of the covenant of the Lord, saying, take this book of the law and put it in the side of the ark. Now, I didn't take that to be inside, but I don't know for sure about that. It could actually mean put it inside the ark, but I don't know that for certain. But it said to put it in the side of the ark of the covenant of the Lord your God, and it may be there for a witness against thee. Beside the ark. Okay, good. That's kind of what I thought too. It probably meant put it beside the ark, that it would be there for a witness. Okay? But Jathan took the scroll with him, and he went to the king to report this progress of the repair of the temple and those kind of things. We see in verse 16 of 2 Chronicles 34. He carried the book to the king and brought the king word back again, saying, all that was committed to the servants, they do it. And verse 17 goes on to say, he reported that what all the workers had done and how they had fulfilled it. Hilkiah the priest had given him a book, and that's what he goes on to say in verse 18. Then Shaphan the scribe told the king, saying, Hilkiah the priest hath given me a book. And Shaphan read it before the king. And you can imagine, this is probably the first time Josiah had heard this read. More than likely. It sounds kind of like that anyway, that he had not heard it before this. I couldn't say that for certain. But he began to read it, and as he did, Josiah probably had not heard it. Verse 19 goes on to say, and it came to pass when the king had heard the words of the law that he rent his clothes. He was just overwhelmed, you might say, by what it was saying, what he found out that the people had not been doing, that they were supposed to have been doing. We're told when Josiah heard the words that he wrung his clothes in distress. He heard of the consequences that were told was going to happen What did he get that from? Deuteronomy. Very good. We'll get there in just a minute. Josiah wanted to know from Jehovah if his wrath was about to be poured out on the people because of their fathers not keeping the law. And that's what verse 21 goes on to tell us. He told him to go inquire of the Lord for me and for them that are left in Israel and Judah concerning the word of the book that was found. For great is the wrath of the Lord that is poured out upon us because our fathers have not kept the word of the Lord to do after all that is written in this book. It's no different today. We're to keep His word today just like they were supposed to have as well.
The latter part of that verse, I think, is very solemn.
That's right. Do after all of it. That's exactly right. It's a very important point of it too. So he sent to Huldah the prophetess who was living in the lower city of Jerusalem to ask if the thing Jehovah was concerned about was going to happen. And she said, Jehovah is going to bring calamity upon this place and upon the people, even all the curses that are written which have been read before the king. Says, I will do this because they have forsaken me and burned incense unto other gods. And we know that curse is found in Deuteronomy 28:15-25. We'll go over there and just briefly look at some of that. Because you can see very well how every bit of it has come true. Beginning in verse 15. Well, let's go to 16. Cursed shalt thou be in the city. Cursed shalt thou be in the fields. Cursed shall be thy basket and thy store. The fruit of thy body. Cursed shalt thou be when thou comest in and cursed when thou goest out. Verse 19. The Lord shall send upon thee cursing, vexation, and rebuke. And just on and on and on in this chapter, all the way down through verse 25, he talks about all of these curses that's going to take place on these people if they do not do what God said. Well, you know, are we going to get that kind of a curse today if we don't do what God said? Well, we're not really told that, are we? In so many words. And yet, if we do what God says, we're told we'll be blessed. You know. So, keep those things in mind. Go tell the king that because he had humbled himself before God, he had rent his clothes and wept, you'll go to your grave in peace. Verse 27 goes on to tell us that. Your eyes will not see all the calamity which I will bring upon this place, upon the inhabitants. Verse 28 tells us. Josiah was more determined to worship Jehovah and to try to turn the people's heart back to God, but it didn't happen. And we'll finish up Josiah on the Lord's Day. Thank y'all for your comments.